is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis, the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. The headlines from south of the border are alarming, violence, and at the same time, democracy in motion. I begin with the Reuters headlines. Ecuador candidate Gonzalez says she will use $2.5 billion in reserves to help the economy. At the same time, another Ecuadorian presidential candidate, Zurita, promises better policing and social programs. There are many candidates in Ecuador, less one. His name, Villavicencio. He was murdered some days before by unknown gunmen who are now in custody, said to be Colombians attached to cartels. Very much what you would hire for a political assassination. Why shoot a man who is very well known in his own country, but not much outside, has spent his career as an investigative reporter and a muckraker, old-fashioned word in America? Well, to tell the story, I ask you very much to have some patience here and talk about the backstory of murder in Quito. Professor, a very good evening to you. Murder in Quito is apparent, and the presidential election goes on with statements made in the debate over the weekend between the remaining candidates and now in the news, promising handouts, promising social programs, promising policing. But driving this story is the murder of a man who was, at the time of his death, polling very well and had a strong indication he could finish in the top two in the election, meaning he would enter into the runoff. You met Villavicencio in 2013, following your reporting most recently. Who was he, and what was Ecuador made in China of that time? What did that represent? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. For me, this was personal because over the years I had worked with Fernando Villavicencio. He was a journalist whose real core calling had become to expose the corruption associated with the non-transparent activities of the previous authoritarian populist regime of Rafael Correa and the people around him. Our interests coincided because a lot of the projects he was exposing were projects that Correa had done and his people had done with the Chinese, for hydroelectric dams, petroleum projects, and other things that were associated with enormous kickbacks with Correa supporters, as well as bad terms for the Ecuadorian state. Over the years, Villavicencio really continued that crusade. He wrote several different books. Two of the ones most focused on the China projects were where I first got to know him, Ecuador Made in China, and the second one was called the Petroleum Holiday, but there were others. After Correa basically persecuted Villavicencio for his attempts to expose those things, there was a libel suit, there was a criminal charge which forced Villavicencio initially into hiding in the Ecuadorian jungle, and then when things got too hot with additional charges, eventually forced him into exile in Peru for a number of years. So when Correa left power in 2017 with his vice president Lenin Moreno then taking the reins, it became safe for Villavicencio to come back in Ecuador. To his credit, his record eventually got him named to basically elected to the National Assembly, where he became head of their anti-corruption commission. So he continued to really be a strong voice against Correa and anti-corruption. Now, taking the backstory a little bit farther, as we've talked about before in this show, with the political transition in Ecuador, a lot of things going on in the country in terms of the explosion of crime and violence, because Ecuador finds itself between two major narco producers. But the embattled current president, Guillermo Lasso, was forced to invoke a clause in the Ecuadorian Constitution, Article 148, where he basically dissolved Congress as well as the presidency, which called for snap elections. Those elections will be this Sunday, August 20th. And in those elections right now, in which Lasso is not running, you have, you still have seven different candidates. And so Villavicencio, because of his anti-corruption reputation, was one of those candidates. Another was a young woman by the name of Luisa Gonzalez, a National Assembly member, who was positioning herself to continue or really resurrect the Rafael Correa legacy. Rafael Correa is actually in exile in Belgium right now, in prison, or trying to avoid prison because of his conviction on corruption charges. And then you have a series of other candidates. You have an anti-corruption candidate who somewhat resembles Nayib Bukele in El Salvador by the name of Jan Topic, who's also been polling relatively strongly. But it was really seen that with the assassination after a political rally of Fernando Villavicencio. Again, this could have been because he was speaking out against established interests of Correa, and people didn't want that to happen. He'd also been speaking out against the different gangs and the cartels behind them. There were even some ties to Colombia, to the son of Gustavo Petro in Colombia, and a high-powered Colombian senator, Piedad Córdoba. There were ties even seen to Venezuela and Tariq William Saab and the Chavista mafia in Venezuela. So the irony was, it's hard to say who murdered Fernando Villavicencio because he'd spoken out against so many enemies in this tangled web of narco-corruption and politics and inequity. And beyond. Some even said that there were ties through the Sinaloa and Jalisco Nueva Generación cartels in Mexico to leadership in Mexico. Bottom line is that Sunday we will have the first round of this snap election. A journalist partner of Fernando's, Christian Zurita, has stepped into his stead, although he probably doesn't have the stature of Fernando. The current leader is actually the Correa acolyte Luisa Gonzalez that I'd mentioned before. She's polling about 30%. Jan Topic is also polling very, very strongly right now on the Law and Order campaign. Obviously, things like these murders, and there was yet another political murder just a couple of days ago, that has really supported Topic's crackdown Law and Order approach. There is another candidate who is actually possibly in the running to get into the top two, Otto Solzen. Sonnenholzer, who is the current vice president, who is, again, kind of a young pro-market voice. So on the center right, there's an indigenous candidate. Ecuador has a very important indigenous population, Yaku Perez, and then a number of others. Bottom line, it looks right now like in this Sunday's election, if things don't change, probably the Correa acolyte Luisa Gonzalez and the Law and Order candidate Jan Topic will probably make the runoff, which will occur shortly after that. And then also to remind us that that it's not just about electing a president; the entire 137-member National Assembly will also be elected. And so, Ecuador, a troubled country in the midst of political transition, with really a wide open field of what could happen, and important decisions coming in just a couple of days.
In taking notes on your new publication, Global at Global Americans, two other players caught my attention immediately because they're from outside. China. China was a big investor in Ecuador under Correa's administration in the second decade of the 21st century, building the Coca-Cola Dam, which is nearly worthless and has caused a redirection of the river so that it destroyed, your reporting, an oil pipeline, a critical oil pipeline, part of the income that Ecuador needs. So China's involved in that. It made a bad investment. It insisted on its own construction company, one of its put-up jobs, did a bad job. There are cracks through the dam. It's almost worthless. At this point, I suppose it does generate some electricity. One other player, Brazil, the Odebrecht scandal attached to Jan Topic, whom you mentioned is a candidate who may very well emerge from the Sunday vote. Odebrecht that's the scandal that swept through all of Latin America and put Lula da Silva in jail, I believe. So what we have here is it's the Grand Central Station of bad actors in little Ecuador. What, Professor, big obvious backstory. Why do they find Ecuador worthy? What is there that all these players are entering into the game? I understand Venezuela. I understand Colombia. But little Ecuador.
Well, John, you're absolutely right. There is a convergence of a number of different factors, and it does create an irony because Ecuador has always been a relatively low violence, relatively well-governed country in a very difficult neighborhood. Even going back to the times of Colombia fighting against the FARC and ELN. What's happened though is number one, because Ecuador is located on the Pacific, and it is between two major drug producers, Peru and Colombia. You've had a number of different cartels beginning to use Ecuadorian routes in places like La Manta, in places like Esmeraldas, and in places like Guayaquil to export that cocaine. And so that has gotten Colombian narco-traffickers involved in the country. That has gotten Mexican groups like Sinaloa and Jalisco Nueva Generación that import the cocaine involved. And they've begun to work through and really supercharged the some of the local gangs like the Lobos and Choneros. And that's been a big part of the explosion in violence. But the other piece, as you pointed out, is the connection, some of the ideological leftist connections. And so Ecuador back in the 1990s and early 2000s had a lot of political turmoil and churn, frustration with corruption and multiple different leaders. So Rafael Correa, this is the era of Hugo Chavez. Rafael Correa basically came in promising change and to clean up the corruption, but ended up being a relatively populist, authoritarian leader, revamped the Ecuadorian constitution through a constituent assembly. And so what ended up happening is that Correa, as he turned away from the private sector and as he turned away from Ecuador's traditional partners, basically turned to China. As a matter of fact, six major hydroelectric projects, including the one that you alluded to, Coca-Cola Sinclair, were done by the Chinese. Roads were built by the Chinese. Electrical power infrastructure was built by the Chinese on a total of about $18 billion of loans in a relatively small country. Part of the problem was that when you combine lots of loans and work projects with the Chinese and petroleum projects with the Chinese, with little transparency in a country where you have basically a politicized new elite, it just set the stage for rampant corruption. And so a lot of those projects were tied with Correa's corruption. His vice president, later president, Lenin Moreno, was involved. Another vice president of Correa's, Jorge Glass, became involved. And so a lot of the China role came from the way that Correa was trying to push Ecuador and get Chinese financing and move Ecuador forward independent of the United States. But as you also pointed out, you had a lot of other players because Correa was a leftist populist who dealt with some of the other corrupt leftist populists in the region, such as Hugo Chavez, and that helped to bring in some of the corrupt Chavista leftist connections. But in addition, even before the Chinese came in, one of the big players throughout the region was, as you pointed out, Odebrecht. And so one of the interesting things, again, this is quite the soap opera, of the current candidate, John Topic, again, law and order candidate, sounds like a pretty clean-cut guy on paper. But Jan Topic's family businesses actually had been involved in getting some of that bribery money from Odebrecht. And it's believed possibly some money came in through a corrupt deal with the previous vice president, Jorge Glass. And so there's some concern not only that Topic himself could be connected with Correa-era corruption, but Topic could be connected with some of Correa's money and maybe some of Correa's influence. And so ironically, if we go to tiny troubled Ecuador, if we go to a second round in this election in which the two major candidates are Luisa Gonzalez, who is directly a Correa acolyte ideologically from his party, and Jan Topic, who seems to be a law and order candidate benefiting from this revulsion against the violence. But Jan Topic himself could actually be tied to Correa as well. And so But there is a convergence of a lot of difficult influences, and it's in part because of Ecuador's ties in this very difficult neighborhood with Colombia and others, and because of Ecuador's impulse, at least under Correa, to reach out to the Chinese under conditions of little transparency.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, what is to be done? Does the U.S. have any authority here whatsoever? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Mellon.